Another reading from the Gospel of Matthew concerning Joseph. Now the birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. But as he considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. If someone has the name of Joseph, he's likely to be a Catholic. And if a church is called St. Joseph's, it is definitely not Lutheran. His configuration and common piety hardly resembles how the New Testament pictures him. To assure Mary's perpetual virginity, he is pictured as an old man who could never have been serious about the benefits of marriage. Self-imposed celibacy hardly squares with a man who was on the verge of divorcing his wife for infidelity. His alleged sacrifice has had its rewards. In the Catholic Church, he is ranked next to Mary. His statue, like hers, earns a lily symbolic of marital virginity. Should Mary be elevated to co-redemptrix with her son, he would be revered as the patron saint of the universal church, a kind of Prince Philip of heaven. Perhaps Lutherans can say no more of him than that he was an exemplary stepfather and a carpenter who, even before Luther came along, had a sense of vocation. Joseph, and not Jesus or Mary, is the first figure to step onto the pages of the New Testament, and just the mention of his name among the hearers of this gospel would have rang a few bells, turned on a few lights, and connected the dots. An earlier Joseph had dreams, lived in Egypt, and was tempted to commit adultery with another man's wife, and even had a father named Jacob. One Joseph did the right thing in resisting adultery with another man's wife, and the other Joseph did the right thing in not making his wife a public example, and in showing mercy, the Bible calls him righteous. The theory of Mary's perpetual virginity has propelled her to higher glory. On the downside, it has compromised Joseph's masculinity. In spite of the undocumented tradition, widespread as it is, when he took Mary as his wife, he was neither an old man nor a widower who desired no children of his own. He was not a laborer, but a contractor. After Jesus was born, Mary gave birth to Joseph's four children, four sons and several daughters. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph constituted the Holy Family, not because of a higher degree of moral holiness than the rest of us sinners, but because God's Son was part of that family. Incarnation means that God infiltrates the ordinary, and by his humiliation, he makes our predicaments his own. We torture ourselves by thinking that our families are spiritually deficient because they do not measure up to the standards of the perfect families hawked by the evangelicals. That false standard of a perfect family can be rectified by reading the Genesis accounts of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 patriarchs. In spite of what they did, but only on account of what they believed, we call them our fathers in the faith. It is axiomatic that the great saints emerged out of dysfunctional families upon whom God shone his special favor. So Paul was right when he said, that where sin abounded, there grace abounded all the more. If that family made holy by Jesus did not recognize him for who he really was, then we should not be amazed that the seeds of unbelief sprout up in our own families. A minister of the gospel is never without honor, except in his own household. However, unbelief is not an impregnable Gibraltar. After Jesus and that family, James was Joseph's oldest son. He became the Bishop of Jerusalem, and his wisdom is preserved in a book which bears his name. Jude, another son, also wrote a book and followed James to the martyr's death at the hands of the Emperor Domitian in Rome. A second son Joseph named for himself, and there was a third son by the name of Simon. Only the Gospel of John says that the woman at the cross was the mother of Jesus. The other Gospels identify her as Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, the son she bore to Joseph. Mary was no greater a believer than any other woman who bought the funeral ointments on that Saturday night to give her son Jesus a proper burial on that Sunday morning. She believed in the resurrection, but it was a resurrection that would take place in the distant future. Surprise of all surprises, that third day had become that distant future. The tomb was empty. Christianity is as much about unfaith as it is faith. At first, Joseph also did not believe that Mary's child was God. Mary did not accept what her son said about being raised from the dead on the third day. And like Joseph and Mary, we will be caught between faith and unbelief, doomed to be spiritually dysfunctional as long as we live. Easter did produce a holy family in which those who do the will of Jesus' Father become the mother, brothers, and sisters of him. That family is called the church, the household of God. Joseph has this one advantage over us. He was a member of both holy families. It is really the third Joseph that counts, and his name is Jesus. Like the Old Testament Joseph, he was hated by his brothers, destined to death, sold for silver, falsely accused, and forgave all those who did these things. In one way or another, that story was told. Maybe it's the only story, again and again in the Old Testament. Then it was told in the life of Mary's husband, and then in Jesus himself. Now that is what we mean when we say that all the Bible, and not just the New Testament, is about Christ, because it is about this story. Read those stories again, and you may find in them an account of your own life.